3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Welcome everyone to the No Normal Show brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at BPD, and I'll be your host for today. In this episode, I'm joined with a couple of new guests, some of my favorite people to get a chance to work on some really incredible projects together. I'm joined by Beth Toner, Director of Program Communications for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and Dr. Jan Marie Garcia, Emerita Professor at Betty Irene Moore School of Nursing at UC Davis. This is part two of our shift conversations surrounding our newly released documentary, Everybody's Work. In the first episode, we talked a little bit about the background of the film, the research, the creative process, all that good stuff that went into the film. And with Beth and Dr. Jan, we're going to be talking a little bit more about kind of the background of how this even came to be and focusing on addressing structural and systemic racism within healthcare and in nursing and specifically. But before we get into that, I'd love to ask you both, was healthcare delivery the last place you'd expect to see racism is existing?
You know, I'm a pediatrician by training, but I have a master's degree in public health from UC Berkeley. And when I got it, it's just a one-year program, two semesters. I took a couple of courses from an education professor, Pedro Noguera, because I was interested in the impact of unequal schooling and that daily experience of racial inequality on the health of children, and then children who grow into adults and adults who make up communities. Pedro is an eclectic interdisciplinary thinker, and he was one of the folks who taught me to look at systems. So, and he talked about why would we be surprised if we have educational disparities, income disparities, housing disparities, that there weren't also health disparities as well. So I learned very early to look at these interlocking systems and then an epiphenomenon in this case of race or class or insurance status or educational status. So we're a helping profession, so it's kind of ironic. But as a workforce, a collective, we reproduce unequal outcomes by race, by gender. And that's a historical process, a script that continues on to today. So I don't know if I was surprised in initially, but it makes a lot of sense with how we've done race, how we've done gender, how we've done class in this country for hundreds of years.
Yeah, that's interesting what you said about this being a helping profession, but in finding those ways that we are causing harm. Beth, I'm curious you, I know you've had a couple of different careers through the years and that you came to nursing in more recent years, but kind of curious your thoughts around your expectations of where racism has shown up.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, surprise. I don't know that it was surprise, but it took me a couple of years, right, to step back and think, oh, that's why that happened. So in nursing school, and I had great instructors, right? But the focus is on, and I was an associate's program because I was an adult learner. I probably shouldn't say how old I was. I was in my mid-40s, right? With, you know, like some life experience, some children, a pretty, you know, pretty responsible job outside of nursing school. But boy, once you get in that setting, you get sucked into the hierarchy, right? So what you are told to do is what you are told you do. You don't question, right? So you think about the micro and macro ways, both the hierarchy of the healthcare system, as well as the embedded isms, the sexism, the racism, the classism. right? You think about the subtle ways and not so subtle ways that that gets communicated to you as a student. First of all, when we talk about, you know, first of all, I hate the word culturally competent care, right? That was what we talked about. You can't be competent in somebody else's culture. It's impossible, right? But I didn't think to question it because I'm like, ooh, got to check that off, you know, as I'm preparing for the NCLEX. And it's words like frequent flyer, drug seeker, just an addict, right? I can't tell you how many times I heard just an addict, right? Passed along and report, but you are so focused on thinking about, I need to pass, I need to get out of nursing school, I need to pass the NCLEX. But it was when I took this job at the foundation and started and moved on to a master's degree, right? Really, somebody actually talked to me about systems. And then some very gracious friends also introduced to me, hey, let's talk about the history of healthcare and how so often people of color have been on the front lines. But when we professionalized healthcare, we moved folks who had been practicing healthcare for centuries to the side. You know, professionalism often becomes a code for racism. So was I surprised? No and yes.
Yeah. You know, Beth, you said something really interesting about the how we just go about doing, checking off a list, going through our processes without actually thinking about what's behind it and what we do. And you know, it reminds me of something, Dr. Jane, you had mentioned in the documentary about following scripts. You know, do you see quite a correlation just like from our everyday life, but also in thinking about how we are just following these scripts within healthcare delivery?
Yeah, so I think it's a great connection actually to what Beth said, because we are socialized in our specific professions. Medicine is not different. And we're so busy as young trainees in the profession, no matter how old we are. And we're not taught to scrutinize the scripts that we have for the other people, for other professions. We're just so busy learning how to do our profession. And the scripts analogy comes from transactional psychology, kind of cognitive behavioral therapy, where you have these deeply embedded scripts that consistently result in dysfunctional outcomes, and hopefully a good therapist will help you identify them. I think about that in the same way as I think about racism, sexism, homophobia, classism, that we're so busy technically learning our professions that no one leads us into deep reflection about the things we produce as a healthcare workforce, as a helping professions workforce. Before we know it, we're reproducing collectively that inequality because we've not been taught to step back and be critical about the outcomes we produce, why they're produced, where they come from, which is often hundreds of years ago. Does that answer your question, Desiree?
Yes, it does. Thank you. And kind of thinking about that and going back to you, Beth, about what you had mentioned of, I don't know, maybe some of these things being more eye-opening, but also like expected. But wanted to get your thoughts around, you know, the idea of addressing racism within healthcare. And so, Beth, with you, we've been working with you for a few years, and we did our first film called Who Cares? That was about an Indigenous nurse focus on providing health equity and culturally relevant care to her patients. And that when we were looking at what we wanted to do for the next film, you had mentioned, I want this to be focused on addressing anti-racism in nursing. Would love to hear your thoughts around, you know, what sparked that idea.
I think first and foremost, right, it was the first film. So I thought a lot about what that first film touched on and the work that Whitney Fear, who is the subject of our film, does in her community. And coupling that with what is the natural next step? And also thinking about the fact that my employer, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, had really begun putting I'm going to use any wrong kind of metaphor, but a line in the sand around addressing structural racism. In other words, if we really mean what we say, that we believe that health shouldn't be a privilege, but a right, then we have to address, confront, elevate the fact that structural racism is baked into a number of systems in our society, but particularly our healthcare system. And, you know, in my work as a nurse and in my work in communications at the foundation, it just, and admittedly, I'm a biased. I love nurses. I love my profession. I believe that nurses are essential to that disruption because we have so much contact with patients. And because we work at so many places, not only at the bedside, we work in research, we work in the community, we work in schools, right? So we can push things in a positive direction, or we can pull things right back 400 years ago. So I wanted to do two things with the film. First of all, I know that good work is happening out there, right? I saw some of these subjects in this film, had met them in my travels and seen the amazing work they're doing. So I wanted to both elevate what's happening, right? What's going on in the profession. And we had seen the research that we had done, that the American Nurses Association had done. We know it's a problem. So both pull that problem into the light and say, yes, racism is an issue in healthcare. It is an issue in nursing. And by the way, there's lots of good work happening to disrupt it. And we can all play a role in continuing that work and doing our own work. And for me, that was both elevate the problem, but also elevate the solutions.
Yes, all about the solutions, very solutions oriented. Because much like you, I'm tired of hearing about what the problems are. It's like, what are we going to do about it? So when we were out talking to some of the folks you had mentioned, and you know, looking also for others that are, you know, doing this great work and educating folks within the classroom, you know, we were looking for those examples of solutions. And we have done some work with the Betty Irene Moore School of Nursing in the past at UC Davis. And you know, Dr. Jan, your name came up in the work that you're doing and the research that you're doing, and you know, part of that amplifying of voices that Beth mentioned is also about the idea of, it's about amplifying the research in a way that makes it a little bit more digestible, where there, we talk scripts, right? We also talk in jargon and a lot of $10 words. And so like, what do some of these words mean? So that's why you really wanted to go around and actually unpack, what are some of the actual solutions that folks can take? What are some of the educational, and learnings, and even some of the terms that you've coined, along with some of the, other researchers and professors along your journey, but would love Dr. Jan to hear a little bit from you about your experience being involved in the documentary.
I have to say it was an honor for me to be included in this effort as a physician. I have had the privilege of being a professor at the Betty Irene Moore School of Nursing for the last 15 years, and was hired by Heather Young and Debbie Ward. And they were clear they wanted an interprofessional group of professors teaching nurses. But more than that, with Deb Bakurjian and some others, I was able to develop a course that went not for a short quarter or semester, but for an entire year, where we could do the things that Beth said she didn't have time to do in her nursing preparation, which was have time to self-reflect on the structural issues. Have time to see yourself as an actor in these scripts that keep reproducing inequality. Have time to develop relationships around this issue, not just around getting work done, but around this issue, what it meant in your childhood, what it meant for your family. And it was called Community Connections, and was one of the flagship courses of our master's leadership program before it sunsetted. But I think it was impactful. Aaron King taught about it. He called it Woke 206. He talked about never having had a chance to sit with these issues, what they mean personally, professionally, societally. And again, I credit the leadership of Heather and Debbie in allowing something like that. By the way, I asked the deans very early on if I could give everyone an A in the course to begin with, because I didn't want people thinking they had to say the right thing to me as a Black woman, or that they could not go deeply in self-critique and self-reflection and have it cost a grade, which is so professionally scripted in both medicine and nursing, right? And those kind of things where we could really curate and nurture a developmental process over a year that was also a collective experience happening in the course of a classroom. So that is one of the ways that we innovated. We also take a trip through the Central Valley, which is a neglected part of California. And I'm sure every state has this, where they get left out of the public policy. They're disproportionately poor, disproportionately undereducated. And we absolutely depend on their contribution as a nation and as a state, just for food only, but also for oil production. All these things we don't know about those we kind of dismiss as not connected to us. It becomes, an extended two-day practice in critical self-reflection and reconnecting or making visible those connections we have to folks we usually only help and don't think of as helping us, as indispensable to our well-being and population health. We have Piri Ackerman-Barger there, nurse scholar at Betty Irene Moore, and she's done very practical, specific work on recognizing microaggressions and interrupting them. Again, finding yourself in this dyad of the target of the microaggression, the bystander, and the source of the microaggression. So we have quite a community there of research and research and teaching, and also connected to our health system as well.
Yeah, some of the folks you'd mentioned, as you're going through your ARC training through Central Valley of California, it's like, I think something else you said was the fact that, during COVID, these folks were out there gathering our food so that we could all survive, and then are often so overlooked. I think about that in terms of like being from the South, right? Or, the coast, where all of the focus has been, on, particular folks, but then what about those that are often kind of,
It's ironic. We have to critically analyze the scripts we have about the other. We call them illegal at the same time we came to call them essential during COVID. But how does that make sense? The half of the fruits and vegetables in our country are grown in California and in its Central Valley. And 60% of our state workforce, agricultural workforce, is undocumented. 40% of the nation's agricultural workforce is undocumented. We don't eat chicken, we don't drink milk, we don't consume all the things we prescribe to patients in terms of fresh vegetables, et cetera, without, that's just one unseen, often denigrated group of the other that without critical self-reflection and time to really make them, pull them from out-group status to in-group status. This is not us against them. This is we.
Yeah, and it's that amplifying of stories and lived experiences that, help us to better understand, what we don't know, what we don't understand, what we ignore, what goes overlooked. And I know, Beth, yourself, you're a storyteller, you're a writer. As I mentioned before, all the careers, all the degrees, but kind of curious your thoughts around, especially as you've watched this whole process and, worked with us to make sure that, we're telling the right stories while we're finishing the documentary. We wanted to have, kind of a similar experience of everyone in the room, and would love to hear your thoughts around kind of seeing all the fruits of your vision, come to life, and kind of what that means to you and the hopes of what we can do in the future.
Yes to all the careers. It's pretty much that I can't make up my mind. The experience, I mean, first of all, right, I said, let's make a film about anti-racism in nursing. And then everybody else went forth and did the hard work. So let's not overplay my role in this. For me, the experience of seeing it come to life, it was everything I expected and then 1,000 other things that I didn't expect. So first of all, I'll be candid. I was disappointed there weren't more white nurses in the room. There were white nurses in the room. There weren't enough white nurses in the room. Right, which goes back to the title of the film. It's everybody's work. Racism in nursing is not Monica McLemore's problem. It's also my problem, right? And I think, right, it goes back to the idea that this is not a zero-sum game. We will all thrive more if we can disrupt and end racism everywhere, but particularly in healthcare. So I was disappointed there weren't more white nurses in the room. And a couple of things that I did, and I loved, first of all, just meeting people that whose work I have watched for years and just in awe, right? Meeting Lucinda Canty for the first time, meeting Monica McLemore in real life for the first time. First of all, I feel like a total frump next to Monica because I will never dress that fashionably. Just saying, you could hand me all the money in the world. It's not about money. She just has so much class that I just don't have. My mother tried, she failed. But just meeting my heroes, right? I mean, really, legitimately meeting my heroes. I had spent time in Oklahoma with Sonia and Toloa, spending time with them. But I think for me, I mean, first of all, it's always wonderful to see something on the big screen. But for me, the kind of the unintended consequence, the thing that I didn't anticipate would be so powerful for me, was seeing the panel connect, seeing nurses who had been in the film, other nurses of color connect with one another, validating everybody else, right? You are not imagining this. Racism is real. We can overcome it. Nurses are essential to solving this problem. And to hear that, you know, when the film went up on the screen and people were cheering for Monica, for Dr. Jan, for everyone, it was such a, you know, I guess I sat there and thought, this is it, right? We need to tell the stories because this is how we are going to make this problem real and also make the solutions real. So for me, it was just the human connection in that room was just, just sitting back and watching it happen was, it made me hopeful.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that hope, and there were so many questions around like, okay, what's next? Like, we have everybody in the room together. Like, what can we do together? Because change does occur because a group of folks got together to make it happen. Right. And so I'm curious, and I'll start with you, Dr. Jan, you know, what is the one thing that makes you hopeful about addressing systemic racism in nursing, as well as healthcare in general?
Well, it's a good question. It's a complicated question, right? So I believe, as Dr. McLemore said in the film, that nursing can be that vehicle of kind of getting at the divide in our country and the delusion in our country that race doesn't matter and racism doesn't exist. We're just making a big deal out of nothing because we don't have anything better to do with our time. That's kind of, and there's some ulterior motive. For me, that hope goes back to my ancestors. And I think about my grandfather, who was an African Methodist Episcopal minister, who also was a community activist in Charleston, South Carolina, during the time of poll taxes and just the violence around just trying to vote, right? And I never met him, but he's somebody I think about a lot. Because he told my mom, I'm not working for myself. I'm working for my children and my grandchildren. And I'm still benefiting from his work. As Beth says, as I'm benefiting from every individual who chose to look and stare at this issue and interrupt the scripts of unequal quality healthcare and the minute by minute ways that is delivered so that we measure something collective and undesirable. And there's no going back. And I think we can't. We owe that to our ancestors. And while it's hard work, I have to hold on to hope, as Cornel West says. I'm a prisoner of hope. And in the context of what the United States has been through, what my grandfather was going through in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, this is the easier part, right? And it's not easy, it's just easier. And I can embrace the hard work and the times when it gets discouraging. I will say this, that there's a lot of talk about DEI and it being divisive and un-American. And I'll just always say, and I think we can uniquely say this in healthcare and nursing, for us, it's always been about life and death. This is a new political framing of CRT and now DEI. Folks don't even know what it is. We've always been battling for equity, and we don't have time. It's not about political ideology. It's not about partisanship. And I do agree with Dr. McLemore that nurses, who are the most trusted profession, the most numerous folks in the healthcare workforce, can be a vanguard of a different kind of conversation around what has been pirated and distorted in a general sense in American society. So I have a lot of hope in this effort, and it brings me hope. And being in that room brought me hope. We could talk a long time about that.
We certainly can. And Beth, what about you? What brings you hope? And, you know, what are some of the things you think about as far as how we, even for yourself and how maybe other white nurses and other white folks in general can be doing better?
You know, I mean, I'm reflecting on Dr. Jahn's comments, right? It's easy, right? I'm a white person. I have not, right? Like, I don't have to look to my ancestors and see how they struggled. It's easy for me to have hope. I mean, it's not easy, but you understand what I'm saying. I think what gives me hope is a couple of things. Yes, to the nurses and everyone in that room, right? That is one thing that crossed my mind. At some point, this group of people will be a microcosm of the groundswell, right? Because people are, to your point, Dr. Jahn, there's no turning back. Like, whatever, they can roll back all kinds of DEI stuff. That doesn't mean that the people who are fired up about disrupting racism and once for all are going to slow down. You may put obstacles in our way, but it's going to happen. I think I am hopeful because I think I look at the generation after me and they are really just done, right? They won't even have a conversation. I think about how I was raised compared to how I see how they have come up and what they understand. And certainly there are folks on who are at the extremes who still share the same divisive ideas, but just, I feel like there's a generation. And I mean, I'm an optimist and I believe, I mean, you asked about what it's going to take. We are beginning to do this as a profession, and healthcare is beginning to do this as a profession. We have a long way to go, and that's acknowledging the harm that we've done. And I'm going to be controversial and say, it's okay to say Florence Nightingale did some good for our profession, but she also did a lot of harm. And we have to be able to hold both of those things. We have to be able to say Florence Nightingale colonized nursing, and that was not necessarily a good thing. So we have to be able to name the harms, and we also have to be able to build relationships. This is about humanity. There is joy in those relationships. And if we cannot have relationships with one another across all of our differences, not only race, a social construct, right? But genders, orientation, all those things. If we cannot have those relationships, we cannot have the conversations that will lead us to the systemic change that will ultimately disrupt racism. So I think as a white nurse, right, I have to be open to feedback. I also have to be in real relationships with folks. And that means putting myself in places that I might not normally go. And I got to get better at that.
Yeah. I mean, we can all do better about just kind of being vulnerable, being open, building those relationships. And we learn so much about each other, but then we also learn so much about ourselves through how we're mirrored and reflected back on the folks that, you know, we surround ourselves by. There was a, you know, I'll end with this. There was a Pew Research article that came out just the other day. And the way that it was worded, it said, you know, most Black Americans believe racial conspiracy theories about U.S. institutions. That word, that phrase, conspiracy theories. And there were so many comments that were talking about, it's like, you know, that's, you're creating harm with the way that you're talking about that. There were the Pew Foundation, they went in to better explain what they were trying to get at in the sense of this, of these words, as Dr. Jane, you had mentioned with CRT back then and DEI now, about how, you know, words get kind of twisted up and misconstrued to put forth our own agenda and what we're trying to get across, right? But that ultimately what this is, a lot of this is about, and the work that we're trying to do with SHIFT, and I imagine overarching with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, is, you know, believing people's stories, hearing them and believing them. And that just because something isn't happening to you doesn't mean that it's not happening to someone else. So,
right.
Did you have something else to add, Dr. Jane?
That's right. That's all right.
Okay.
That's correct. It's hard. It's hard, hard work.
It is. It is.
To validate the perspective of somebody else when it's not your experience. And that takes a kind of cognitive discipline and humility.
Yeah. Almost like a sense of just trusting your fellow human and like what they're telling you is, you know, what they're experiencing. All right, let's wrap it up. Beth, Dr. Jan, thank you so much, both of you, for being here. Some of my favorite conversations. But for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining and listening in as well. If there's something you want us to cover on the No Normal Show, shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com. And make sure you share the show with friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. All of that would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied by the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we'll talk to you next week. 3